Good morning, everyone. Can you guys hear me okay? Happy Halloween. Seriously considered whether or not I should come in some sort of Halloween attire, but my advisor was like, I think maybe focus first. So Dawn is my advisor, and our presentation is on adolescent allostatic load in the U.S. Does the dysregulation process start early? Dawn and I have no relationships to disclose. So here's a quick brief overview of what I'll be discussing. Now, motivation for this research is based on a number of things. First, research on the gradient of health has led to the need to better understand how stressors during life get under the skin to affect health. And this has led to an increase in biodemography research, or the use of biological measures to understand trends in population health. Biodemography also explores mechanisms by which stressors contribute to health disparities, specifically the accumulation of stressors over time. Second, the majority of literature investigating biological markers and the accumulation of stressors pertains mostly to older populations. And this makes intuitive sense, as older individuals are more likely to accumulate stressors over the course of their long life. However, studying older populations fails to incorporate how early life stressors, such as those in adolescence, say, can play an important role in the accumulation of stressors throughout one's life. This brings us to the developmental period of adolescence as a significant phase in the life course. During early adolescence, puberty is triggered by combined neural and hormonal signals sent from the hypothalamus. The variation in hormone levels during puberty can influence physical as well as psychological adolescent development. Late adolescence is characterized by cognitive and social changes. Cognitive development during adolescence is seen as a time of formal operations, abstract and concrete thinking skills, contributing to movement toward maturity and increased responsibility in social roles. Socially, adolescents spend increasing amounts of time with peers, which actually may influence adaptability to stressors. Now, socioeconomic disparities early on contribute to lifelong negative behavioral and health consequences. For example, socioeconomically advantaged adolescents have greater access to resources that can improve health during adolescence and adulthood, such as access to health information, better quality health care, protected neighborhoods, and even social networks that can enhance social support. The concept of allostatic load is ideal for revealing the mechanisms by which the social environment can lead to poor health. The concept states that chronic stressors accumulate over time and lead to increasing allostatic load and greater risk for poor health outcomes. The mechanism by which this is done is known as cumulative physiological dysregulation, or the interconnection of biological systems, such as the cardiovascular, metabolic, and immune systems, as they become dysregulated. So when an individual perceives a threat, the body releases primary stress mediators, which alter the function of specific cells and tissues. Secondary outcomes occur when alterations in cell function and gene expression shift the production of biological parameters. If a system becomes dysregulated for a prolonged period of time, other interconnected systems also become affected, which causes damaging effects that are known as tertiary outcomes. The concept of allostatic load, and this is very important, focuses heavily on the collective influence of numerous biological markers of systemic regulation. Now, initial empirical work considering allostatic load includes Seaman et al.'s 1997 work of elderly men and women, showing that higher cumulative allostatic load measures were associated with significantly increased risk for all-cause mortality. Crimmins and colleagues found that mean allostatic load increased with age, supporting the idea that cumulative dysregulation occurs over time. And Geronimus et al. Found that blacks aged 18 to 64 had higher allostatic load scores at all ages than did whites. Now last, Evans's work on children and allostatic load found that children who were exposed to greater accumulated psychosocial and physical risk factors had higher levels of allostatic load. We examined sociodemographic differences in the levels of allostatic load among early and late adolescents. Our first hypothesis is that levels of allostatic load will significantly increase with age. Our second is that significant interactions between gender and race ethnicity will exist, showing that African American females will have higher levels of allostatic load than other female and male racial ethnic groups. Our third hypothesis is that low SES adolescents will have significantly higher levels of allostatic load compared to those with higher SES. The National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, also known as NHANES, is a biannual survey that monitors the health status of the U.S. civilian non-institutionalized population. Now, NHANES uses a complex, multi-stage probability sampling design to collect information through interviews and physical examinations. As recommended by the National Center for Health Statistics, to increase statistical stability, this study utilized data from five of the NHANES cycles, starting in 1999 to 2000, all the way through to 07 to 08. Our sample includes adolescents aged 12 to 19 who have valid data on all biomarkers used to create the allostatic load score and completed the interview and examination elements. Our sample size was 8,150. The sociodemographic measures we used are listed in the table. Age is measured in years at the time of the screening interview and is stratified by early adolescents, age 12 to 15, and late adolescents, age 16 to 19. Race and ethnicity are categorized by non-Hispanic white, non-Hispanic black, Hispanic, and non-Hispanic other, which included races such as Asian, Native American, and multiracial. Gender was coded as female, and an interaction variable for race, ethnicity, and gender was also created. Socioeconomic status was measured using two of the most commonly used variables, household family income and educational attainment of the household representative. Our dependent variable of allostatic load was comprised of 10 biomarkers. The biomarkers used for this study were selected for their high public health relevance, significant association with biological systemic functioning, and, of course, their availability in the data. The 10 biomarkers used were cardiovascular markers, including diastolic and systolic blood pressure and pulse rate, metabolic functioning markers, including body mass index, waist circumference, total cholesterol, high-density lipoprotein, and glycosylated hemoglobin, and inflammatory and immune markers, including serum albumin and C-reactive protein. The operationalization of allostatic load in this study is through the Group Allostatic Load Index. The Allostatic Load Index uses empirical cut points that are based on the sample distribution rather than clinical thresholds. And this is because there really aren't clinical cut points that exist for a number of the markers, especially among younger age groups such as adolescents, and because distribution-based cut points better capture subclinical dysregulation. For each of the 10 indicators, empirical cut points were determined by the 75th percentile value, which we identified as risky. Of course, with the exception of HDL and albumin, whose risky cut points were defined as below the 25th percentile. Adolescents who exhibited values in the risky zones received a score of 1 for that parameter. The composite allostatic load index was then created by summing the number of parameters that fell into the risky quartiles. So the range of allostatic load scores for this study was 0 to 10 because we had 10 biomarkers. Values close to 0 signified that these individuals experienced few systemic regulation markers, systemic dysregulation, excuse me. We assessed descriptive statistics, such as measures of central tendency and variability, including the range, mean, and upper and lower quartiles of each of the 10 biomarkers used to determine allostatic load. Adjusted Wald F test and bivariate regressions were used to examine differences in mean allostatic load by demographic group. Now, as the measure of allostatic load is actually a continuous count-based summation, it has a non-normal positively skewed distribution. As a result, our analysis used a negative binomial regression model to allow for a more flexible model. So predicted empirical allostatic load scores were determined from these regression models, and they also included gender by race interactions. Last, all regression analyses were performed using appropriate weights as provided in the data, and a five-panel weight variable was calculated to enable weighting across years from 1999 to 2008. Table 1 shows descriptive statistics including range, mean, and high-risk quartiles for the 10 biomarkers used to determine allostatic load score. Remember, HDL and albumin have a high-risk quartile set below the 25th percentile. These risky quartiles are based on the empirical sample. That's very important to remember. This is based on empirical sample. At the very bottom of the table, we see that the mean allostatic load score among adolescents aged 12 to 19 was 2.6, and the range of scores was 0 to 10. This indicates that there was variation in the number of high-risk biomarkers experienced by adolescents. Figure 1 shows the percentage distribution of allostatic load scores within the sample, with nearly 25% of adolescents having an allostatic load score of 2, or a high risk on 2 biomarkers. Over 10% of the adolescents were high risk on 4 biomarkers. This table shows weighted descriptive statistics for adolescents aged 12 to 19. Now, weighted percent distributions are located in the center column. We see that 48% of the sample was female, and approximately half were aged 12 to 15. Approximately 63% were non-Hispanic white, and 14% were non-Hispanic black. The majority of adolescents had a household representative with more than a high school education, and 18% of the sample, 8%, excuse me, was foreign-born. Mean allostatic load scores are found in the far right column. We see that older adolescents had higher mean allostatic load scores than younger adolescents, which is shown inside the yellow circle. Mean allostatic load scores also increased with lower education and annual family income. Female adolescents had higher mean allostatic load scores than male, and non-Hispanic blacks had the highest mean allostatic load score compared to non-Hispanic whites and Hispanics. Foreign-born adolescents had lower mean allostatic load scores than U.S.-born adolescents. Now, adjusted Wald F-tests showed that mean allostatic load scores differed significantly for all groups, except for those between Hispanic and non-Hispanic other adolescents. This table shows weighted and negative binomial regression results for allostatic load score among adolescents aged 12 to 19. Estimated count ratios are shown in the center column of the table. An adjusted Wald F test indicated that the gender by race ethnicity interaction term was significant. So we see in the yellow circle in the middle of the table that compared to non-Hispanic white male adolescents, non-Hispanic black females had allostatic load scores 15% higher. Adolescent age was significantly associated with allostatic score. Holding all other covariates constant, adolescents aged 16 to 19 had an allostatic score 17% higher than those aged 12 to 15. Nativity status also proved to be a significant predictor of allostatic score, and foreign-born adolescents had allostatic scores 18% lower than U.S.-born. In summary, using 5 cycles of data from 1999 to 2008 and Ann Haynes, we examined sociodemographic profiles of allostatic load across adolescents from ages 12 to 19. Allostatic load increased with age. These findings on allostatic load profiles among adolescents are unique, and that they are the first to suggest that disparities in allostatic load exist among the adolescent population using a national sample. The increase in levels of allostatic load with age, specifically from early to late adolescence, is supported by previous findings on adult and aging populations that show similar results. Our gender by race interaction show that allostatic scores for non-Hispanic black females was the highest. These findings are consistent with those of Deronimus et al. And Chu and Upchurch, who found that black women had significantly higher allostatic load scores than white women, and suggest that racial disparities in allostatic load exist even at younger ages. Now, the weathering hypothesis has been noted as one possible explanation for higher levels of allostatic load among black females. Now, this hypothesis proposes that the health of non-Hispanic black women may begin to deteriorate in early adulthood as a physical consequence of cumulative socioeconomic disadvantage. Now, our study suggests that this deterioration may actually occur at earlier ages, such as adolescence. Last, adolescents with a household representative who had a higher education and a higher family income had lower allostatic load scores, suggesting that adolescents with access to greater resources have improved health during adolescence. Now, limitations of our study include the cross-sectional nature of NHANES. Obviously, there is no ability to examine change in allostatic load over time within this population of adolescents. And another limitation is that the biomarkers used in operationalizing allostatic load are restricted to what's available in the data. However, our study is one of the first to explore sociodemographic differentials in allostatic load among early and late adolescents, and this does help to fill a gap in the literature on cumulative physiological dysregulation throughout the life course. To conclude, as research on the gradient of health leads to the need to better understand how stressors get under the skin to affect health, the use of biomarkers in exploring population health have become more important than ever. And while the majority of literature investigating biological markers and the accumulation of stressors pertains mostly to older populations, the importance of studying stressors over their life course is essential. This study is one of the first to explore biological markers of stress and health among a nationally representative sample of adolescents aged 12 to 19, and we believe the study is a necessary step in understanding the process through which early life health disparities contribute to later life health trajectories. I'm all done. So you asked about whether or not we were looking at allostatic load among African-American women for all socioeconomic levels. So the measure of socioeconomic status was the same for all of the races. So any adolescent who had a household representative that reported a lower socioeconomic status across the board had higher levels of allostatic load, regardless of what their race was. We didn't specifically look at an interaction between race and SES. So as far as the significant differences in levels of allostatic load for African-American women, we could just show that African-American women had higher levels of allostatic load compared to other races, and that those who had lower SES had higher allostatic load. But we didn't do an interaction between the race and the SES. In the back? So that's a good question. She asked whether or not I created the allostatic load index or it was available in prior research. Is that correct? So the research history on allostatic load, it's only been around, say, for maybe the last decade. And Teresa Seaman is one of the original, along with Bruce McEwen, who actually developed allostatic load score. And the allostatic load group index, which is what I used in this study, was the same that was originally created. There have been different iterations on allostatic load score. Some of them use weighted versions because certain markers weigh more heavily than others. But the cut point of the 75th percentile is, at this point, if you could say there's a gold standard, that would technically be the gold standard. So I based it off of previous studies. I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Cortisol.
So cortisol would be ideal but I was restricted to what's in the data, and Haynes, in terms of cortisol measures, you know, you need an early rise and you need to show the slope over time in the morning, and there were just, and Haynes wasn't able to execute that. But in ideal allostatic load measures, having things like cortisol would be wonderful. There have been previous studies that have used cortisol and allostatic load, but those samples are generally much, much smaller. So in that respect, it's hard to generalize whether or not using cortisol would be ideal, but if we had a much larger sample like an NHANES with cortisol, I could see that being fabulous. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So just to wrap up, I want to thank our presenters, but I want to bring something into this discussion that I think is kind of new and coming out of perinatal epidemiology that I think a lot of people are going to be hearing about if they haven't already. It's a British epidemiologist named David Barker who's been working on fetal origins of chronic disease. And there's a new journal called Developmental Origins of Health and Disease. And there was an international meeting in Portland, Oregon that I was able to attend where I saw a lot of molecular biologists, basic scientists, epigeneticists looking for some of the things that we started to touch on here. I mean, essentially, one of the themes that's come across in today's presentations are life course issues. And the developmental origins people are looking back at events in utero and their events, their effect on chronic disease, on diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. And other people are looking at events before conception and the effects on subsequent generations and the, believe it or not, the inheritance of acquired characteristics. Thought that one was put to sleep 50 years ago. So keep your eyes open and try to learn more about that. I think we're going to try to put together a session on that for next year to broaden this discussion. A lot of it is focused narrowly on the nutritional aspects of what women eat while they're pregnant, but I think it's a much, much broader issue than that. So thank you all for attending. If you haven't signed the sign-up sheet and want to be part of the MCH section or a reviewer for next year, please sign it. And thanks to all of our presenters and to the audience.